Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 166 of Left of Skeptic. My name is Brittany Land.
And I am Kayla Moria.
And we are a paranormal podcast.
Yes, we are.
Kayla.
Hi.
You have someone sitting next to you.
I do. We have another special guest.
Yes.
So, everybody, give a big round of applause for Brianne Marie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This is exciting. You said you have someone sitting next to you, and with a paranormal podcast, I was like, wait, is there someone between us,
Kayla? Alice. It's just Alice.
Just Alice. Okay. We like Alice, right?
Yes, we like Alice. All she does is just occasionally interrupt the podcast with a sigh.
She thinks we're annoying.
Yeah,
but
she doesn't. We talk too much sometimes. So Brianne Marie is famously of Brianne Marie and the Front Porch Sinners, and then she does solo projects. And then she does stuff with her husband sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then I did not know, do you have like a name for your singing telegram business?
No, it's just I do singing telegrams. So people reach out to me and they find me on the internet. You search singing telegram Duluth and I'm like the only person that comes up.
What? I didn't even know you did this.
So many years I have done. I just did one last weekend up the shore in a bougie lakeside home for a one-year-old and their grandpa. They had a shared birthday. And I went in and played
what?
A few songs. It was amazing. I get dressed up in a cute dress. Nothing racy. It's not that kind of telegram.
It's no happy birthday, Mr. No. President.
Although I've been asked to do that and I said no. And you know, here's why I said no, because they also wanted me to do a little dancing. And I'm like, listen, the outfit, the heels, and the song, I'd fall over.
It's just a practicality thing, not a say against any raciness. You're
I'm
like, I will
that.
Not be able yeah. to do that.
So, I get dressed up. I bring a flower and a little note card. And I have a list of songs that a lot of people choose from. And I go in and I surprise somebody, embarrass them, and then their heart warms because like somebody chose to get this for them as a gift.
Yep.
That is amazing.
Yeah. I'd like to add to this service, possibly in the fall. Kayla has given me the idea to do singing telegrams as a clown occasionally. I really want to do that.
You're really gonna love me later.
I kind of want to pull up on like roller skates or maybe a little tricycle as a clown.
That would be amazing.
Do a little finger picking on like a ukulele.
Yes.
Okay, could you be like big comfy couch clown? Because she was adorable.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I could see that. I could see you pulling off the big comfy couch look.
For right now, it's just country chick in a dress shows up to do a telegram. That's what it is. But yeah, I do that and the band and yeah.
I love that. In middle school, I was part of because we were the Blue Jackets. So the Jammin' Jackets was the middle school choir that we were like the specialty choir. And we did singing telegrams. And I don't know if you have this on your list, but I did it like twice. Shaggy's Angel.
Oh,
was real popular when I was in middle school.
Angel, you're my darling.
Oh my God,
Angel!
You could turn that song. You could turn that into a country song so easily.
Yeah,
you should.
Oh. I like it. Let's bring that song back.
Let's bring it back.
Somebody hire Brianne to go embarrass somebody by singing Shaggy's Angel, please.
Yes,
thank you. Also, because all of our guests participate in Homegrown. Brianne is also on the Homegrown steering committee with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always fun.
Red jacket.
Mm-hmm. Red jackets for life. Not for life. It eventually ends. Brianne, how many Homegrowns have you participated in? Do you know?
Are we counting the pandemic?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Then all of them since 2012. That was my first year. The year of 2020, we did a Homegrown performance in our house with bandmates on the outside of the house and put cords through the doors and windows.
Aww.
We did a live stream. And then the following year, I think we submitted a video for 2021.
Yeah, because that was the year Corey did he made a whole big thing on YouTube.
Yeah. So really every single year since 2012, it was just Evan and I that first year. Then I added some bandmates. Matt Shaleen was in the second year, which was really cool on keys. He's been on a couple albums. And then it's been full band pretty much after that every year, which is pretty sweet.
Nice. Very nice. That makes me, I'm like, I'm all proud that I've done it for 3 years. And you're like, I've done it every year since 2012. I got 10 years on you. Thanks.
Oh, I'm older than you, Kayla.
Not by that much. And mentally, I may be younger, but like physically, my body feels like it's 60. So,
oh, girl, same.
If it makes you feel any better, I've played zero homegrowns.
No, but you're always involved somehow.
I have done a lot of homegrown giveaways where yes. they have to find me in order to get swag. Yes. I've done it with Chaperone Records, and I've done it with The Current.
Chaperone, that is a name I haven't thought of in a minute.
Yeah. Ugh. And Brittany, you're a homegrowner. Like, you go out, and if I'm on stage and I'm playing a song and Brittany walks in, I'm like, oh, Brittany, bingo card.
Brittany made
check
it.
Check that one off.
Hashtag where's Dizzo, hashtag where's Britney.
Yes.
Yep.
Hashtag mother clucker.
Yes.
All right. So you ready for some jokes? Yeah. I got some jokes.
Let's do it.
Let's do some jokes.
Well, this is a weird one. This has never been phrased like this before. So what happened when Dr. Frankenstein entered a bodybuilding contest? Upon arrival, he'd realized he'd completely misunderstood the objective.
What? Usually it's like a one-liner.
This is more complicated than most of these jokes are.
Yeah, I've never had to be like, well, upon arrival.
All right, here's more standard for these cards so far. How does a vampire start a letter?
I don't know.
To whom it may concern.
To whom.
Hardy har.
Yeah, these jokes are not always the greatest. Sorry.
At least it didn't make me mad. Sometimes they make me like really mad. Oh. And I'm like, Kayla, no.
Fired.
Well, am I forgetting anything or should we crack into it?
I think we should crack into it.
I opened mine already.
That's okay. It's hard to edit more than one crack.
Title of your sex tape. All right.
So much crack editing.
Do you? So my sister listened to the episode and she said, I love Kayla, but sometimes she's such a dirty old man.
I know who I am and what I'm about. And yes,
and then
you're
she's
right.
Like, I'm also a bit of a prude, but also I think sometimes she's just a dirty old man.
Oh my God.
So at one point, we were talking about various things. It might have been related to one of my band members, Junk Size. And Brittany goes, your mom and dad listen to this. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And then my dad called me after the episode came out.
What?
And I was ready to just be like, he's like, you can't talk like that. But no, he was like, Abe was really funny. I'm like, thank you. Okay.
Validation.
Way better than I felt like this conversation was going to go. Thank you, Dad. That helped. So, has anybody ever heard of Tonopah, Nevada?
No.
Mm-mm, no.
So, Tonopah is an unincorporated town in Nye County, Nevada. To give you an idea with a bigger city that's more well-known, this is about 3 hours north of Las Vegas.
Okay.
So, it is nicknamed the Queen of the Silver Camps for its mining history. And it is now primarily a tourism-based resort city. Notable attractions like the Mizpah Hotel, which is the first location I'm going to talk about. And then a different motel that I will tell you about later, but I'm surprising Brittany with it.
Wait a minute. This is an unincorporated town, and yet it's also a tourist attraction?
Yes.
I've never heard of that before.
And it used to be, I'll get into that a little bit, it used to be a much bigger deal because it was mining area. But then that all kind of died out. So.
Right.
You'll see. I mean, anything can be a tourist attraction in the middle of a desert as long as there's something there.
Right. So maybe not a lot of touristy things like Bayfield has a lot of stuff, but there's like one thing there.
Yep. So first, the Mizpah Hotel is what I will be talking about today. Located at 100 North Main Street, the Mizpah Hotel is one of the most historic hotels in the state of Nevada. When it was first built in 1907, at 5 stories, it was the tallest building in the entire state. And it remained so for 25 years until the Hotel Nevada beat it by just 1 floor 25 years later.
Sorry. I like how they're like, we could just cut it off here, and then the owner's probably like, no, one more floor.
One more floor. We need to beat that Mizpah hotel.
Fuck those Mizpahs.
It was built for $200,000, which in today's money would have been $6,602,680.85.
Okay.
It's a spendy hotel by today's standards still.
I've got something in my story that I'll need you to remember that number.
Okay. I'll keep the page up. Featuring solid granite walls, leaded glass windows, and Victorian-era luxury apartments, solid oak furniture, hot and cold running water, steam heat, brass chandeliers, stained glass windows, and an electric elevator, which was one of the first in the entire state at the time. This was like the height of luxury for the middle of the desert in the early 1900s.
The height of luxury as the tallest hotel.
Yep.
Yes.
The Mizpah Hotel celebrated its grand opening on November 17th of 1908. Although many historians make a quick blanket claim that the frontier was settled before the early 1900s, this was not the case for Central Nevada, a place with some of the state's largest silver and gold discoveries, because it's in the middle of a giant freaking desert. So who settles there? No one, until you have no other options. It's the middle of the desert. It's hot. Why is it hot? Why is it that hot? It doesn't need to be that
hot. There's no livestock. Once the railroad's built, you're not sticking around for any part of building. Like, what are you doing in the desert?
So we find that out in 1900 when a gentleman named Jim Butler discovered silver in the mountains surrounding Tonopah. This region of the Silver State was relatively undiscovered. And he, like, from what I understand from reading the stories, he, like, was picking up rocks. And he's like, this rock is heavier than it should be. Oh, there's silver in here. And then, boom. Now, all of a sudden, it's a big deal. Now we care that it's a giant freaking desert. So, from that point on, the silver boom was on, transforming this quiet little mining camp into the queen of silver camps. Between 1900 and 1910, the population of this town soared, like, with the growth of the mines, and with that, they were like, okay, we need a place for people to stay. So a small group of businessmen worked together to build the Mizpah Hotel as a place to entertain and conduct business with powerful politicians and business investors from around the world. Since the beginning, it has been host to prospectors, politicians, preservationists, and various other P words. I was pretty proud of that one. I love alliteration. It has stood firm throughout shifting economic tides. And, you know, it's hard to survive in the desert. Like you said, there's no reason to really be there.
Yeah, what are you doing in a desert?
I'm not interested in being in a desert, that's for sure. Give me some trees.
When I was there last July, it was 120 degrees.
I get thirsty when you say the word desert.
I know.
It's too much.
And we make the joke around here in the wintertime, you're like, why do I live where the air hurts my face? Mm. When you're in that much heat, it's like, why am I where the air hurts my entire body?
Mm. Right. Mm-mm. It's awful.
And everybody's like, oh, it's a dry heat. It doesn't matter.
It's 120 degrees.
It's still not great. Gaming came to the Mizpah in the 1940s. The first chips were issued in 1945. And then they installed a casino that had a roulette wheel, craps table, blackjack, and 80 slot machines, which was a big deal. Continued on throughout the years. And finally, like, the mining had slowed down and there was more, like, Vegas had gotten bigger. Reno was still small but bigger. And it just kind of all died down. And the Mizpah closed its doors in 1999. It stayed closed until 2011 when Fred and Nancy Klein of Sonoma, California, purchased the hotel and began renovations. Their renovations were specifically made to restore it to its former glory and keep it historic.
Mm. I mean, that's how you get people to be interested in that. Like, Vegas is all the glitz and glam and modern. And you're like, nope, we're going to go back to 1900s.
Because at that point, if they had tried to make it, like, big and flashy in a town with not much else, people would just be like, well, why wouldn't I just go to Vegas?
Right. Yeah. So. It's vintage. They want to go vintage.
Vintage. It's the 45 to the CD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did that make sense? I still don't know what I'm talking about. So anyway, Fred and Nancy still own the hotel to this day. Many original elements of the Mizpah Hotel remain today. That electric elevator that was one of the first in the state is still the one that they use. They like updated it and they fixed it, but it's still the same elevator used today.
Imagine the people who went up and down in that elevator.
Mm-hmm. And the Tonopah Banking Corporation vault is still intact and can be viewed in its original state in the lobby. Hashtag fun fact. This building has a history with Key Pittman. I am not from Nevada, so I didn't understand that that was important, but apparently was. He was a United States Senator from Nevada from 1913 to 1940, and he was fond of the area and was a regular visitor to the Mizpah Hotel. And legend has it that Senator Pittman died of a heart attack on the eve of the 1940 election. And supporters kept his body on ice in a bathtub in one of the rooms of the Mizpah Hotel until the election was over and his successor could be appointed.
Oh, like a Weekend at Bernie's situation.
Wait, did he win though?
Well, no, it was like he wasn't running. It was like they were finding his successor, like the next person. And so they were like, we're not going to downer this by announcing that he's dead.
Well, no,
so
but
we'll just keep him on ice in a tub.
He was running in the election.
No, he was done with his term.
He was done with his term. This was just on the eve of that election.
Okay.
There are disputes about this story. An article I found in the Reno Gazette Journal swears that this story isn't right and that Pittman died at the Riverside Casino in Reno. But the story persists and people keep telling it. And the Mizpah embraces that story by having their casual dining restaurant called the Pittman Cafe.
Oh, my God.
They're like, we have this story about this senator who died and we kept him in a tub. So, like, let's name our cafe after that.
Well, I mean, he was also a famous senator in Nevada who used to go there a lot.
Still,
I think they probably would have named it after him, even if there wasn't the story of the tub. But I hope that that's why they did it.
Right.
Fine. Be logical, Brittany.
I mean, I want to go into the gift shop and I want to find reusable ice cubes with, like, his face on them. That's what I want to find.
Yes.
Marketing. This
yes.
is important.
Oh my God, that's bloody brilliant.
Yeah. See, they can hire me for just a nice little handsome fee per hour freelance. I'll go out to the desert for like one day.
Fred and right. Nancy, are you listening? Let's do this. Let's figure it out. Anyway, so according to 2018 USA Today's 10 Best Readers' Choice Awards, the Mizpah Hotel is the nation's number one haunted hotel.
Wow.
We come across a lot of number one haunted
hotels. Oh, it's like world's best cup of coffee.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
But this was a USA Today specific one from 2018, so it felt like an accolade I should throw in there.
It's a credible media outlet.
I mean...
You couldn't see the face she just made with that.
There was a bit of a wink. I will also say that I think they do the world's most haunted things every single year.
Oh, sure.
And yeah. I think it changes every single year, which is...
It's conveniently always around Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice.
Maybe some of those hotels are big advertisers for USA Today. We're not sure. We're not making any claims.
It's just
something to consider.
Sure.
We need to get a haunted rep for Homegrown, and then we can just start throwing it out there around that time of year.
Yes, yeah.
See, marketing.
We're on it.
This is just a brainstorming session, really. Okay, so this building is rumored to be infested with ghosts, and legends of strange occurrences have been coming out of the hotel since its inception, but more recently, since Fred and Nancy took over, because they really embraced this. Like, there are stories previously of it being haunted.
Right.
But it really started getting talked about when they took it back over and renovated it. I'm sure that's another great way to bring people in.
Mm-hmm.
And they just like ghosts. So they're like, hey, every ghost here is friendly and let's talk about it. That's fun. I like it when places embrace their haunted history.
I thought you were trying to imply that it was like they're just telling a story and then completely not bringing up the fact that we bring up every single time. What causes more ghostly activity? Renovations.
Yes. No, I'm just saying that they didn't talk about it a lot previously. Like, there are stories of it, but this was like when they were like, oh, let's tell people this is haunted. Whereas it sounds like previous to that, they were always like one of the hotels that just like people talked about it being haunted, but they never brought it up to the media or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So they're embracing the haunted history.
I love that. Because then it's easier for me to find if I want to go stay at a haunted hotel.
I love that for you.
The Klines state that the ghosts delight in interacting with guests. One spirit reported at the Mizpah Hotel is that of Rose, a murdered sex worker. Guests report her presence after their items mysteriously move from one place to another and various things that I'll get into in just a minute here. The legend of her life goes as such. Rose was a high-class prostitute who lived on the top floor of the Mizpah.
Damn, penthouse.
One tragic evening, she was strangled in the hotel by a jealous client who over time became more than just a client, but became a lover.
That's less good.
Yeah. He wanted her to stop her line of work, and she refused. She was like, I'm making this money. I'm an independent woman. We could be lovers, but I still got to work. I could get that bread.
Okay, this is the plot for Moulin Rouge. Were they singing, too?
There was no singing.
Was this an elephant? No, it was the penthouse. Okay, keep going, keep going.
I didn't even make that connection. I love this.
What? I'm totally gaga over Ewan McGregor in my brain right now.
Oh,
you didn't.
Ewan McGregor.
It didn't come to your mind?
No.
Okay. Except he's not the one who murdered her, so
no,
that's
no.
good.
No, no, no.
He's jealous.
He was jealous.
Sadly, she was reportedly stabbed and strangled on the fifth floor where she's often sighted. When she's seen, she is dressed in a flowing red gown, and her apparition is accompanied by the scent of roses and soft whispers.
At least she's still looking fabulous.
Still going for it. And
yeah,
you know what?
Get it, girl.
Nicole Kidman wore that red dress.
She did.
Oh, my God. This was the inspiration to Moulin Rouge.
Smoldering yes. temptress.
You figured it
Everything's
out.
Everything's going so well. Okay, we just needed a little Zietler moment. We're good now. Let's come back.
Guests have reported finding pearls under their pillows, which are said to be the remnants of a necklace torn from her neck during the murder. Rose is also known as the Lady in Red due to her dress, and she's often seen in rooms 502, 503, and the surrounding rooms, 504, I believe is another one, and the connecting hallway, adding an eerie dimension to the hotel's fifth floor. Rose is the most prominent, but she is not the only spirit at the Mizpah. There is also a nameless soldier who was reported to haunt the third and fourth floors. His name is unknown. All that is said is that he probably died at the hotel. And you probably know this, but we've talked about it several times. Lots of people die at hotels.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's just a thing. It's yeah. just a thing that happens.
Is he wearing a uniform?
They just said he's a nameless soldier. So I assume he's in a uniform. Otherwise, I don't know how they would identify him.
As a soldier.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, but we don't know, like, what war. Like, what generation.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Given the Mizpah's deep connections to the mining community, it is unsurprising that you can see some spectral miners.
Mm-hmm.
Not like OR, like ER. I mean, there are, okay.
Children.
So, yeah, there are children, but like spectral miners, like they mined for silver. Mm-hmm.
They got the pickaxe over their shoulder.
They do.
I can see it. And they're holding a lantern.
They didn't have child safety regulations, then there might be some minor miners.
True.
The minor miners, ghost versions. Yes.
That sounds, okay. Minor miners sounds like a band name. And then Spectral Silver could be the album title.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can lead that.
Yep. Got that. I'm on it.
Sounds like a project Johnny Blaze would be involved in.
Totally does.
Yes.
So guests have reported encounters with apparitions of men donned in old-fashioned clothing and carrying pickaxes, believed to be the spirits of miners who once sought fortune in the surrounding mines.
I love a good pickaxe.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The third floor of the Mizpah Hotel is known for the innocent laughter of ghostly miners with an O-R. Ghostly children.
Mm-hmm.
The laughter will echo throughout the hallways, especially during the quiet hours of the night. No one knows the identity of any of the children behind the laughter, but their playful sounds are sometimes more than just audio. They've been known to play pranks on the guests and are most often seen in the hotel rooms and hallways on that third floor where they will like move stuff around. So their playful pranks are just moving things around, but it's usually accompanied by laughter.
Aha.
Which is kind of cute if you think about it.
Yeah, that's friendly. You know, that's not threatening.
It's not as long as it's not like a maniacal laughter. I guess I didn't specify what kind of laughter it is.
Oh, yeah. Was it creepy clown laughter or was it just little child laughter?
Or was it big comfy couch laughter?
You thought that was all? Not quite. Two bank robbers were apparently murdered during a heist by their co-conspirator in this hotel. Their ghosts are said to haunt the basement, giving cold chills and strange sensations to visitors and staff who happen to find themselves there. According to Cody Dare of the paranormal investigation teams of New Reality 11, they witnessed a lot of action while filming a TV episode at the Mizpah, and they said, "The basement is no joke. There was an old miner down there, very tall and very territorial. Lots of activity there. Lady in red, we didn't catch much, but we did feel her presence," unquote.
Ooh.
Ooh. John R. Bayer of the Victorville Daily Press booked some time at the Mizpah Hotel to see what all the hubbub was about for himself. He had stopped there during the height of COVID times, and he was unable to stay because height of COVID times.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went back in with the goal of staying in the Lady in Red's room. Unfortunately, the room wasn't available. And at least at the time he tried to book it, there was about a year-long waiting list, according to the front desk clerk. The front desk clerk said, quote, "Everyone wants that room. Weird how people would want to sleep in a room near where a woman may have been killed," unquote. I'm like, yeah.
That's a very good point.
When you put it that way.
Yeah, she's like, this is the former crime scene of where a woman was like brutally murdered. But yeah, okay, you can
book
it.
You want to stay there? Okay.
There's an appeal to that, though. Like, even,
oh, I get it. I mean,
you know.
It's an appeal for me. No, absolutely. Right. But I understand if you're not somebody who's into that being like, why?
Sure. Like, why would I? Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be appealing for the ghost aspect, but for the murder, I would rather just the ghost just be there for no particular reason at all.
I'd rather it be a ghost that's there because they loved it in life.
Yes.
Oh, that's nice. That's a great thought.
Yep.
Yeah.
So instead of staying in this room where there was a giant wait list, he got a room on the second floor and he put himself on the waiting list for the other hotel room. So he apparently might go back one day.
Eventually.
A year and a half from now. It's like whatever.
Right.
After checking in, he headed to the bar for a drink and he said that the bartender named Alex was super nice and shared some ghostly history of the hotel. And I liked this quote from the article. Quote, "There was enough for at least two rounds and we weren't driving," unquote. Like, yeah, I'm just going to get drunk and listen to this bartender tell me ghost stories. That sounds like a great evening.
That actually does sound like a lovely evening.
Now we're headed to the desert.
Yeah. We figured out what's good about the desert. Right. The alcohol and then being able to stumble up to your room afterwards.
That's just every hotel, though, really.
And maybe bringing a pickaxe because, all that silver didn't get taken.
Gotta dig.
Gotta dig. You're never going to know unless you try.
Exactly.
Alex then told them, "I don't believe in that stuff, but I'll tell you, I don't like going into the basement." And so this author was like, joked with her. He's like, "I know all those stairs going down that you have to come back up again." And Alex was like, "No, that's not what I meant. There's this strange feeling I get down there, as if someone's watching me. I usually ask someone else to go get whatever I need so I don't have to experience those feelings." So you've got somebody who says, "I don't believe in this stuff, but also fuck the basement."
I don't go down there.
So I firmly believe everybody has. So you know those stairs that you can get that don't have a back?
Oh, no. Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is that feeling. And so I want to know what kind of stairs they are that go down in the basement, because I could believe wholeheartedly it could be a new building and I know that there's no way it's haunted. But if I have to go up and down stairs with no back, I always think something's going to come.
Someone's going to grab you. Yep.
Yeah. Like, we've all seen people under the stairs.
Yes.
There are people under the stairs. So
that's
we don't.
So upsetting.
We want like a rise along with every run.
It's fine it's fine if it wrote, if it's Roach though, because I had such a crush on him.
Oh my God, he was so cute.
He was so adorable. People under the stairs. It's a character.
Yeah. I mean, his tongue was cut off, but he was super cute.
Okay.
It was like emo early on.
I don't know how to describe it. I don't know.
It was
a feeling. We can't recapture it.
I'm just as lost as you are. But they are freaking out. The giggles.
We went from Ewan McGregor to Roach. Oh, okay.
So, anyway, John stays overnight without incident. And then in the morning before they left, they went up to the fifth floor to take some photos outside of the rooms and like in the hallway. It was about 6 a.m. and they said no one was moving around the hotel. And as John is snapping some shots, he felt the hair on the back of his neck stand up. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but he was like the they is him and his buddy Paul who came with him.
Oh, okay.
And so here's what the article said. As I ran back through the five shots I'd taken of the door, there was nothing but a quick view of that door behind the screen that went blue in every photo. And Paul said, I think you may have shot a video too. As it happened, I had taken a short video by accident. As I watched again, the hair went even higher in the back of my neck. There was the door with a greenish-blue hue plainly seen at the bottom and then a loud crashing sound. And there was no one in the hallway but Paul and me. I asked, did you hear anything when I took those photos? And Paul said, no, but I think it's time to go. Did I witness paranormal activity? I don't know. But just before heading downstairs, I took another couple shots of photos in the hallway away from that door and had no issue. Each one came out clear and bright. Is the Mizpah Hotel haunted? Again, I don't know. But when that reservation comes up next year, perhaps we'll find out.
Okay. He took photos of the hallway where he was staying.
And I think when he keeps saying the door, I think he's referencing the door of like that. I don't know if it was 502, 503, or 504, but okay. Those ones that they specifically referenced were like where the lady in red is most frequently seen.
And there was like a greenish blue, almost like a screen. Yes. Over the doorway.
Yes.
That they didn't see.
Right.
He accidentally took a video.
Yes.
And in the video, you can hear a big crash, but in real life, there was zero crash.
Exactly.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Some users on hauntedplaces.org also had a couple of thoughts to share. A person named B. Lyons said, staying in room 510 right now, the closet door opened by itself and the dresser drawer opened about 8 inches. I pushed them both closed and they slid open again.
Oh, I don't like that.
Mm-mm.
The closet door I can see because sometimes latches just suck, but the drawer doesn't make sense.
And she's very clear, or they are very clear, 8 inches.
That's
a big gap for a drawer to come flying out.
Yep, exactly.
That is a big gap.
Another user named Kathy said, we drove through town late one evening during spring break on our way to a tournament in Tahoe. We had intended to find a room in Tonopah because we were dead tired. However, all of us in the car got the weirdest feeling as we passed the hotel and decided to press on. A really weird feeling like nothing I've ever experienced. I looked it up when we got back into the land of free data and discovered the history of the Mizpah Hotel. I want to go back now that I know, but it'll have to be on my own accord because the kids will have none of it and my husband would rather not. Any takers? Kathy's like, I don't want to go by myself, so I'd rather go with random strangers because my family is not coming with me.
I like the husband's comment of, it's such a, like a Steve like response. Like, we should go do this. And he's like, I would rather not.
I'd rather not.
It's not a straight up no. It's just like, listen.
Please don't make me.
I'd rather not.
Like, I guess you could make me, but please don't make me.
We all have very sweet husbands. And I feel like that's mm-hmm. a response that they would all give. Like, if you really need this, I will do it. But I'd really rather not.
I'd really rather yeah. not.
I can hear it. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take this opportunity to insert this week's special code word. Mother Clucker.
Yeah. Nice.
So we are, as we've said previously, giving away 2 week-long wristbands to the Duluth Homegrown Music Festival. This is a $40 value. Plus, you get a little beer cozy. Plus, you get a patch. They're super cool. All you have to do is DM us on either Facebook or Instagram with the word Mother Clucker, and you'll be entered in. You can still go back and do the code word from last week, too. So there's 4 opportunities to send us a code word with each episode of April. And then we will draw for it on Friday, April 26th. And then we'll message you on however you messaged us and figure out how to get you these passes. So code word, Mother Clucker. Send it to us. By the way, if you're not going, you can like still win it and then just give it to somebody you would think would want to go.
Gift it. Yeah. You could gift it in your podcast that you put on.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, they'd really only have like 2 days to do it because it starts on Sunday and we're giving it away on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When we got a submit, I saw at least one of the submissions.
Yeah.
And it came up as a notification on my phone. And I was very confused why someone. So if you didn't listen to last week's episode, one, you should. But you're also going to get the code word here because it was just chicken. And so it was just someone messaged us just chicken, exclamation, exclamation, exclamation. And I'm just like. What?
You're like, why? Why?
Yeah, I was like, what are what?
You forgot about the contest.
I did. And then I was like, oh, that was a code word. I thought you were like shaming us or something. I don't know. I was so confused.
Did you check your surroundings and see if somebody was like,
yeah,
looking
like
at
what?
You after sending
somebody
you
was
chicken?
Warning you that there was a chicken close by. Beware the chicken. Some chickens can be scary. They're mean and they peck you.
I mean, they're little tiny dinosaurs, kind of.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they're definitely little tiny dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Okay, so code word. We got that out of the way. So that was the story of the Mizpah Hotel, which originally I was like, that's not enough to fill an episode. I can't do my half of the episode just that. And then I was like, wait, Tonopah, that sounds familiar. And then I, as a bonus, I realized that Tonopah is also the home of the famous Clown Motel.
Ooh.
Do you know the one?
I don't know the one.
What the fuck, Kayla?
The Clown Motel.
This is why I didn't say it and I didn't put it on our sheet until. Because she doesn't like clowns. So this is the clown. This is the Clown Motel.
Oh. Well, that's fun.
No, it's not.
You want to see it?
I know about the Clown Motel.
Okay. So.
You terror.
So. I wanted to stay there when I road tripped with my mom and Auntie Becky last summer.
Yeah, when you went to
Garth
the
Brooks.
Concert. Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yes, let's go. And my mom quickly was like, uh-uh. Kayla Kathleen, absolutely not.
I'm right there with you, Kayla's mom.
I got a full middle name for even suggesting it.
This was beyond the I'd rather not.
No,
yeah,
this was
are you
absolutely
fucking
not.
Kidding me? No.
My mother would not, but she got as close as she does with Kayla Kathleen. She would say, are you fucking kidding me? But I know that's what she means when she goes, Kayla Kathleen.
Because she says it.
Especially when she goes, tone. Kayla Kathleen Shapersky, and that's not even my last name anymore. So, and then I was thinking about, like, just looping Auntie Becky in on it and booking it anyway. And I was like, that would be a pretty douche canoe move to do and try to surprise with. My mom hates clowns.
Mm. Evan hates clowns.
She read It and could not after that.
Mm-hmm. I watched it at an unusually young age.
So for those of you who may not know about the Clown Motel, and you should, appearance-wise, it's every bit the classic creepy motel you've seen in horror movies, except the exterior has a giant clown with the name tag Jolly attached. And when I say giant clown, I mean it is as big as the two-story building. And if that's not enough to put you off, it's next door to the famous Tonopah Cemetery. So,
naturally.
A little bit.
Naturally, yes.
A little bit more history here. The Tonopah Cemetery is said to be haunted due to it holding people who died from the Tonopah Plague of 1905, which was a disease that swept through the town. It started as chest pains, which led to death within a number of hours, and dissections carried out to understand what was going on found that the livers of the victims were completely black and hard like stone. The cause of the disease was accepted to be pneumonia caused by poor sanitation of people working in the mines.
Spread by clowns.
We'll get to the why the clowns are there. There's a reason I'm including the history. So it also holds the victims of the Belmont mine fire of 1911, which in February of 1911, a fire was identified deep in the Belmont mine. Newspapers of that day reported it had started at the level of 1,166 feet below the earth.
Holy
so very
moly.
Deep. William F. Big Bill Murphy was among the men volunteered to go down and load up the miners as, like, trying to help get them out.
Yeah.
Returning to the surface with a cage of rescued men. He went back a second time, and it was at this point just, like, smoke-filled fire pit, basically. Despite the fumes, he was determined to go down a third time.
Ugh.
Took a little longer for the cage to return to the surface. When the cage emerged, it was full of weary men, but no Bill. One of the semi-conscious men said that someone had fallen out of the cage when it was coming back up.
Oh, no.
Everyone knew it was Bill because his last known words before he fell were, well, boys, I've made 2 trips and I'm nearly all in, but I'll try again. In total, 17 men lost their lives that day, including 28-year-old Bill, but he died saving so that there weren't more losses, and his gravestone in the Tonopah Cemetery read, "Died while saving others."
Aww, I want to know how many people he saved.
A monument to Bill stands outside the post office, and there is a mural depicting his funeral procession along one of the stores. I just liked throwing that in there. It felt like I wanted to talk about Bill.
Oh my God, I was waiting for it to come back to clowns, though. I was like,
we'll get there. So that same mine,
okay,
30 years later, had another big fire.
Oh no.
And that was in 1942. Clarence David, who died in that fire, had children named Leona and Leroy, and they were the ones who opened the motel next to the cemetery where their father was buried. So they chose that location for the motel.
Okay.
Because it was near where their father was buried, and they used that motel to display all 150 of their father's clown collection.
Oh, there it is.
So this clown thing is a labor of love next to a very haunted cemetery. And that was how the clown motel was started.
I would never trust a person who collected clown memorabilia. 150 pieces of clown memorabilia? Like, yeah, maybe he was a great dad, but Jesus, what?
I mean, don't you think the kids, the surviving kids, were like, I'm not taking his collection, and they're like, I'm not taking his collection, and they're like, what if we just put it in a hotel?
And let's so put other it people close, can put it there.
Let's bring it as close to his remains as possible and as far away from our own homes as possible.
See, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That right there makes sense.
Like, I'm taking the Hope Chest, you take the encyclopedia collection, and these clowns are going near the cemetery.
Yeah, he can have his fucking clowns back, because fuck these clowns.
The interior is an eclectic clown-themed decor and countless figurines. Prepare yourself for a visual feast of clown memorabilia adorning every nook and cranny, from life-size clown statues to vintage circus posters. The reception area of the Clown Motel is a world all its own.
Oh my, and it's not just clowns. This is vintage clown shit. This is like what clowns look like way long time ago, which yep. I freaking love. Did you even get to go at all?
No.
Kayla, let's go to the desert and look at clowns. Let's Thelma and Louise this shit and go.
Let's explain to our husbands, like, here's the deal.
And they'll be like, I would prefer not to.
I'd rather not.
I'd rather not.
And that's fine, because we're going to go. We're neighbors. It's fine.
Oh my God. I want a clown keychain as a little keepsake.
Oh, I didn't even explain this at the beginning. She's also my next door neighbor, which is just
bonus. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yep. Brittany's got this look on her face after looking at this lobby. She's not into it. So.
Can I go back to the room where that lady was murdered?
Yeah, that seems comforting, right?
That seems so much more comforting.
The reception area has picture walls adorned with clown paintings, shelves brimming with clown dolls in all shapes and sizes, and a front desk attended by staff who fully embrace this clown life.
No. No.
Once you settle into your room, you'll find the clown motif continues wherever you go. Rooms are filled with clown wallpaper, clown bedspreads, and clown figurines perched on dressers to create an ambiance that is unsettling. Or, yet, I mean, if you really funny. Like clowns, you're maybe into it.
I am into it. Do you remember that movie Problem Child?
Yes.
Right? And was it the foster parents or where? He went somewhere and like the whole bedroom was clown-themed.
I'm just thinking of that Supernatural episode where Sam has to deal with the clowns that chase him.
That's right. I love that.
I'm with Sam on this one.
So, while the Clown Motel's quirkiness is its main draw, there are some paranormal aspects that attract some visitors as well.
Oh, good. What is better than a clown hotel that's haunted by clowns?
Stories of strange occurrences and unexplained phenomena have woven throughout the entire United States to attract people to come to this clowny, fun area. Some claim to have heard laughter echoing throughout the hallways. Imagine it, instead of the little children's laughter from the Mizpah, it's just like clown laughter, like
yes, and like that echoey laugh you hear at like a mini golf place where there's a clown character and it's that automated.
Brittany right? is really not digging this right now. She is so. You look like Abe looked when we talked about the Dybbuk box.
Oh no.
Okay, so some claim to have heard the laughter. Others swear that the eyes of the clown dolls follow them. That is something I feel like a lot of people say about statues. But then some say that the clown figurines will move on their own.
Why does this place exist? Oh, right, because the children didn't want these fucking clowns in their own houses.
Douchebaggins brought the crew of the show that shall not be named to the Clown Motel in 2015 to film an episode. Scenes include a visual sighting of a dark silhouette, a voice heard saying, hello, it turned on when they were using a spirit box, and the most famous of the episode, the hand of a large clown that is caught on camera moving off of its leg entirely on its own accord.
I hate you so much. That's awful.
After more than 20 years of lovingly looking after the Clown Motel,
oh God,
Bob Perchetti decided it was time to retire and enjoy some free time with his wife and daughters and sons and many, many grandchildren.
Sans clowns.
I mean, he left the funny business.
God damn it, Brianna.
I think that's that line will save my sanity for whatever the fuck Kayla's going to say next.
So the Clown Motel went up for sale with an asking price of $900,000 with the strict condition that the new owners keep the motel running with the clown collection intact.
Did anyone want to buy it?
Yes. Yes, they did.
I don't trust
those
motel
was purchased in 2019 by the Mehar family from Las Vegas. They are experienced hoteliers, which I guess is a word. And they bought it, and they're dedicated to keeping it up. They are looking to honor its legacy so that it may be preserved for generations to come. If you want to check out the Clown Motel for yourself, just be aware that they have a disclaimer on their website. Paranormal activity disclaimer. By visiting the Clown Motel, you acknowledge that you may encounter interaction with spiritual and or unexplained phenomena and or other unexplainable, unusual, or paranormal activity or interactions, which may include risks which may or may not be foreseeable. The Clown Motel will not be held liable for any bodily injury, damage to personal property, emotional distress, death, or other harm caused by the aforementioned.
The Clown Hotel is going to fuck you up, and it's not our fault.
Yeah.
Smart move, though. Smart. You're not going to get sued for some ghostly activity here.
Yeah, they pretty much pretty all-encompassing. If you're physically injured, if you're emotionally injured, we warned you.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. So that is the tale of the Mizpah Hotel and the Clown Motel in Tonopah, Nevada.
I love it.
I don't like it.
You know,
the hotel. The hotel, not the motel.
The historic hotel.
Hotel, motel, Holiday Inn. So, Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
On a skeptic scale of paranormal, we rate our stories afterwards for how believable they are. On a skeptic scale of paranormal, para being 5, normal being 1, what are you going to give the Mizpah?
The first hotel?
Yes.
4.5.
Okay. And the Clown Motel?
7. Sounds fucking awful.
What do you think, Brianne?
Yeah, I would give like a 4.5 as well for the Mizpah. For the Clown Hotel, listen, it's not the location. It's those collection items. This guy collected clown shit from all over.
150.
Several of these pieces came with a spirit. They came with something, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
That's what you got is a collection of like rehomed
haunted ass clowns.
And that's why it's like you can buy this hotel, but all this shit stays here, which I kind of like, right? Like that's just the trap. That's where it all lives.
Yeah. The other option is they move things and then more hell breaks loose.
Right.
Here's the deal. I agree that everything should just stay there. I just would never buy it, nor would I trust anyone who did buy it. I think that it should just decay and fall apart and be returned back to the earth.
Next to the cemetery.
Next to the cemetery. Like this, we can expand the cemetery into the clown hotel. That's where all the clowns can go after they die.
Okay. Did those kids start to get rid of some clowns and then they resurfaced?
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, shit, we got to put this in a hotel next to their father.
Yeah. Dad needs these. Chucky is.
Yeah. He just wants to come back. They threw it in the trash and it was there the next day on the front porch. And they're like, what?
Looking at the door.
All this funny business.
I'm going to say
You'll
4 points.
You'll never get rid of me.
Yeah. I'm going to say 4.5 for the Mizpah. And I'm actually going to go a little bit back. I'm going to do 3 for the Clown Motel, only because part of me wonders how much of it is actually haunted and how much it is just that you're in a room full of fucking clowns.
Right. You're elevated in your
anxiety.
Anxiety and awareness. Yeah.
What is a phobia of clowns again?
I do not remember. Mm. Do you need me to look it up?
I feel like you should look it up.
The people want to know.
The people want to know. It's relevant to the information of the story.
They need to bring it up in therapy this week. They want an official term.
I didn't know that I had a phobia of clowns, but now, therapist, I am aware that I have.
Coulrophobia.
There you go.
All right.
I don't have a full-on phobia, but, you know, if I go to that clown hotel, I probably will get pushed over the edge. Mm-hmm. But apparently it's not their fault, so that's okay.
I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. All right, Brittany, what do you got for me this week?
Yeah, not clowns. So when I was trying to decide what I would cover today, I was thinking, Brianne Marie and the Front Porch Sinners, country, Old West, cowboys, outlaws, famous outlaws, Jesse James, and ended up at the Jesse James family farm in Kearney, Missouri.
Nice.
Yeehaw.
Now, for those of you who may not know who Jesse James is, let me give you a little backstory of Jesse. And I gotta say, I was a little surprised. We'll cover it. All right, so Jesse James was the son of Kentucky natives, Zerelda.
Nice, love I like that name.
Zerelda Cole James and her husband, Robert James. Born in Clay County, Missouri on September 5th, 1847, Jesse Woodson James was the couple's second child. He had an older brother named Alexander Franklin James, who went by Frank, and a younger sister named Susan. His father, Robert, was a Baptist minister and a hemp farmer who relied on slave labor to run his more than 100 acres of farmland. Also, he only had 6 people, which I think is vastly understaffed for 100 acres of farmland.
Ah, but the word there is staffed, and he did not pay these people. He just bought them.
Yeah, and this is actually a really important to help explain the family's stance during the Civil War, which would inevitably determine most of Jesse's life choices.
All right.
In 1850, Robert James left his family to preach to the mining camps in California during the Gold Rush. However, not long after arriving, Robert contracted cholera and died.
Okay. I would feel bad, but I don't.
No, he was a slave owner.
Yeah.
Yeah, not feeling it.
Mm-hmm. And Baptist minister.
Also that. Yeah, like, do the miners need to be preaching? Okay.
I'm just saying. So Jesse was 3 at the time, and then Zerelda was left in financial straits, having to care for not only the farm, but also Jesse and his 2 siblings. Zerelda, though, wasn't alone for long. 2 years after Robert's death, she married a man named Benjamin Sims. This marriage didn't last long, though, as allegedly, Benjamin was not a fan of Frank or Jesse. And not long after tying the knot, Zerelda left him.
Yeah, get out of that relationship. That's shitty.
Right. If you don't like my children, go away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Package deal.
She then married Dr. Reuben Samuel in 1855. who was described as a quiet, passive man standing in the shadow of his outspoken, forceful wife. Together, Zerelda and Reuben had four children, Jesse's half-siblings, Sarah, John, Fanny, and Archie. And the couple lived seemingly happy at the James family farm in Kearney, where they seem to have transitioned from hemp farmers to tobacco cultivators, again relying on slave labor to run their farm.
Yeah.
Though they upped it to 7 enslaved individuals for the tobacco farm versus the 6. Now, while all this was happening, the rumblings of a civil war had started, and Missouri, a border state between the South and the North, was in a bit of a tricky position.
That's what I was thinking when you started mentioning the Civil War, because it's always interesting to hear the stories along on the border states, because you're pretty clearly going to figure out who's who, but on those, it's I'm wondering what's going to happen.
Yeah, because it's not like a Texas-Minnesota situation.
Yep.
Right. This is like family fighting family.
Exactly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Especially in Clay County, where the James Samuel House was. Most of the folks in Clay County were from the South, and they raised the same crops and livestock that their families had done before they moved north, which depended highly on the work of enslaved individuals. But Missouri's economy, like as a whole, was heavily linked to the North. So while Missouri had voted against secession from the Union, there was a significant number of people who held Confederate sympathies.
Right. And like, were they hooked on that tobacco? Like, was Chicago and New York like, we need our smokes? What is going on? I don't know what's happening.
Well, so they're saying, so from what I was getting from that is that they were heavily tied in. So they need, at that time, everybody smoked.
Right.
Smoking was like everywhere. It was all the time. But also, I assume that they relied on a lot of the northern states for stuff coming in for them, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of, like, Missouri as a whole had their economy tied to the north. But in Clay County specifically, a lot of them immigrated up from the south, and they just did the same things they did there, and they needed enslaved individuals to make that happen.
Sure. Yeah.
So, the whole state is all tied in, but this county specifically is like, okay, but we still think we're in Oklahoma.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm with you.
I believe that Missouri as a whole had a 10% population of enslaved individuals, whereas Clay County specifically had 25%.
Okay. Yeah.
So leading up to and when the war officially broke out in 1861, tensions were running pretty high in Clay County. And guerrilla warfare against the Union soldiers and local militias, known as Jayhawkers, was common. And the James Samuel family sided with the Confederates. Frank James joined one of the local militias and fought alongside the Confederates before falling ill and returning to the family farm. Then, in 1863, Frank was identified as a member of the guerrilla squad in Clay County, and a Union militia raided the farm looking for Frank's posse, during which they tortured Reuben and allegedly lashed 16-year-old Jesse.
Oh.
This did not help Jesse enjoy the Union soldiers.
Yeah.
And Frank, who had eluded capture at this time, was said to have gone on to fight many battles, including, allegedly, the Lawrence Massacre in Lawrence, Kansas, which I talked about in episode 39 when I covered the Eldridge Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they killed 200 men and
it was a
children.
Very, yeah, it was a very,
very bloody battle.
Yeah.
Wow.
In the spring of 1864, after traveling around the South and having fought in multiple militias, Frank and his gang returned to Clay County, where young Jesse joined in on the fight. The brothers teamed up with William Bloody Bill Anderson and his bushwhacker group, which led to Jesse James getting shot in the chest. He was only out of the game for like 3 months, though.
Seriously?
Yeah. He survived it.
There was like no ER back then.
I know.
It's like pulling a Monty Python, like, it 'tis but a flesh wound.
It tis but a flesh wound.
But he was shot in the chest? How does something like that heal back in those times?
I have no idea.
Apparently, surprisingly well.
3 months.
Right. Because a few months later, after he recovered, it is said that Frank and Jesse took part in the Centralia Massacre that September. 'tis but a flesh wound. It happened sometime during the summer, and then come September, he was boarding a train and killing a bunch of people.
Dang.
So this, that, dang. Yeah, dang.
Dang.
Dang. Look at him.
The Centralia Massacre is where members of their guerrilla group attacked a train of unarmed Union soldiers returning from duty. 24 of the men were taken from the train and murdered, after which some of them were then scalped and dismembered. They also ambushed and defeated Major A.V.E. Johnson's Union Regiment and killed more than 100 men who had attempted to surrender. And that's just to name some of the atrocities. So needless to say, the James brothers were not good guys.
When I was like, I think I always had in my head Jesse James. I'm like, oh, just a cowboy.
So Robin Hood type.
Yeah, I didn't know all of this history. And I'm like, oh, have I been like associating this with like cool cowboy guy? And I'm like, oh, wait, no, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, like when I hear Jesse James, I think of Cher and the song.
Yes,
it's romanticized.
Exactly.
It is, sometime in the, like, I want to say 1970s-ish, 1950s to 1970s, he became this idealized version of a cowboy, like a Robin Hood type dude.
Larger than life.
Legend.
Not murdering people and then scalping them,
like
kind of thing.
The same thing that we encounter with a lot of, like, we all, I'm sure, a lot of us grew up with our grandparents, or if you're a little bit older, parents or whatever, like watching Westerns in the house.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And then you watch the Westerns with them, and then that's what your brain is. And then you're like, oh. And then the more and more you learn as you grow up, you're like, oh, this was not something to idealize.
No.
At all.
Right. No. Right. So after the war, Jesse continued his life of crime and his hatred for all things Yankee. And as one of my sources said, he took it upon himself to continue the violence that the Civil War had brought.
Oh, Toby Keith.
Billy the Kid.
No, I was trying to figure out where the... Are we just... I was trying to figure out where the Jesse James, like that song that I was thinking of, and not to like talk about another person who has passed away and also didn't seem like that great of a person sometimes. But there's the, I should have been a cowboy. And isn't there a line where like, running wild through the hills, chasing Jesse James. Isn't that
yep.
a...
Yep,
okay.
And, oh, you got it right on. That was dead on.
See, and I was thinking that... I don't remember who sings it, that I Miss Billy the Kid.
Miss Billy the Kid.
Yep.
Who sings that one?
I don't know. It's 90s country, though, right?
Yeah, 90s country is the only...
Yeah. I have such a love for that, but yeah, Toby's a turd person. rest in peace, turd person. What do you do? I don't know.
But hey, if you're just only talking about the music...
Right.
I'll listen to Should Have Been a Cowboy all day.
It's so good.
Oh, Should Have Been a Cowboy. Anyway, he was also a family man. So he was an outlaw and a family man. It made sense in my notes without the talking in between.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to detract. We side tangent sometimes and it detracts from the story. So an outlaw and a family man.
An outlaw and a family man. When in 1874, he married his cousin Z. And they would later go on to have four children together, Jesse Edward James and Mary Susan James, and twins Gould and Montgomery James, both of which passed away in infancy.
Interesting name choices for the twins.
Yeah.
Gould?
Yeah. Gould.
All right.
Yeah.
There's a story there somewhere.
There's a story there that I don't know. Also, in 1874, the Adams Express Company, who was sick of being robbed by Frank and Jesse James and their gang, decided to turn to, I just decided to say that sentence, freeballing it, and should have just stick with the words on the page.
She's up there jazzing it. Doo-da-bop.
Yeah. I'm just scatting, really, at this point. So let me just read what I actually wrote. Also, in 1874, the Adams Express Company, who was sick of being robbed by Frank and Jesse James's gang, who had turned to robbing banks and trains for, I don't know, fun, they hired the Pinkerton National Detective Agency to put a stop to their thieving ways.
Ah, yes, Weezer. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wait, isn't that like the super problematic album?
I don't know anything about Weezer, but maybe.
I think so. I think there's a lot of Asian fetish.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In that album.
I did not know that.
Anyway, on January 25th, 1875, Pinkerton detectives attacked the James Samuel house in an effort to stop them from robbing and stuff. This attack had left their half-brother Archie dead and their mother Zerelda without her right hand, as it had been, quote, blown to pieces.
Holy
and needed to be amputated.
Holy shit!
Also, the two brothers were nowhere near the farm when it happened. They just went after the family.
They just came in and tore up the place.
Okay, well, when you're pissing people off all the time and robbing them and being a generally shitty, like, couple of dudes, eventually that backlash is going to hit people near and dear to you. And
right.
Now you got a dead brother and a mom without a hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tale as old as time.
Tale as old as time.
We say that all the time.
We do say that all the time. Yeah, yeah. It's.
I love
you're
it.
Right
that
here.
And
you're
full
right
circle.
Here.
Yeah.
You're right here.
This, of course, did nothing to persuade Jesse from his life of crime.
Why?
It really just pissed him off more. And he continued his life of crime and thievery for another 7 years. Jesse, his brother Frank, and their fellows continued to rob banks, stagecoaches, and trains across the Midwest, and they were doing pretty good until they attempted the robbery of a bank in Northfield, Minnesota.
Yeah, you don't fuck with Minnesotans.
Where several of their members were of the gang were captured and killed. And this was, honestly, this was their downfall. Minnesota was their downfall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Minnesota. Passive aggressive is sometimes just aggressive.
Minnesota, the beginning of the end.
And although the brothers got away after this failed bank robbery in Minnesota, and they did in fact go on to recruit more members, they were now very much under the eye of law enforcement, and there was a renewed effort to capture and or kill them. By the time of his death in 1882, it's estimated that Jesse James had stolen just under $250,000.
Which, in today's money?
Is just over $7,600,000.
Oh, like a hotel.
I could have bought that hotel and had money left over.
Nice. You'd have about $400,000 left over.
I know, right?
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Cheese and rice.
Speaking of Jesus Christ.
Enter Christ.
Jesus.
Like Jesus, the cause of Jesse James's death? Betrayal.
Oh, I thought crucifixion.
I was totally picturing a cross and nail.
I was like, wait, was Jesse James crucified? I do not remember that story.
No. No. He was betrayed.
What's it called when, like, stigmata?
Stigmata, yeah.
Oh my God.
No,
he was betrayed
by one of his own. Like Jesus.
It's just like Jesus.
Just like Jesus.
I have brought you frankincense.
Just like Jesus Christ.
And I have brought you myrrh. Murder. Judas.
So Jesse James died on April 3rd, 1882, when one of his own gang members, newly recruited, Bob Ford, shot him in the back of the head, killing him instantly.
It was an inside job.
Allegedly, Bob had done it for the reward money. I don't remember what Judas's reasoning was, but betrayal.
Wait, I was Catholic. I should know this.
You should know this.
I think there was reward money in it for Judas.
Was there?
I don't know if there was money, but he was like, the man I kiss is the man you want. And then he went and kissed Jesus, and then Jesus was arrested. I remember that because I remember boy on boy kissing.
Yeah, I was raised Lutheran, and it was just all cartoons and no adult, like, subject matter.
Yep. Same. Also Lutheran.
I was raised Catholic. There was a lot of adult subject matter that I look back, I'm like, why are we showing this to five-year-olds? Right.
That seems abusive. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems a little much.
Problematic, like the Weezer album. We better get on that.
Full circle?
Full circle.
We need to save the children and the emo kids. There's problems everywhere.
We need more special guests. These last two episodes have just been so good. All right.
So Jesse.
So wait.
After
about,
he was betrayed.
About after Jesse was Judas. Yes.
He was originally buried on the family farm so that his mother could protect his remains from trespassers and souvenir hunters. Though he would later be interred at the Mount Olivet Cemetery in Kearney with a tombstone that says, Jesse W. James died April 3rd, 1882, age 34 years, 6 months, 28 days, murdered by a traitor and a coward whose name is not worthy to appear here.
Oh, dang.
Like, I feel like that was supposed to be a slight, but I'm still just like, yeah, just point out that he was murdered because he was a piece of shit. That's where my brain goes.
But that's like not what they said.
Last word, though.
Yeah. Like, you know what? He was murdered by a traitor and a coward who, you know what, is not even worthy to be named.
But by doing that, they could have just not included that last part at all. They could have just been like, he died. His family will miss him. I don't know.
Right.
Like, but they were like, no, he was murdered. And their name is not worth mentioning. It's like the passive aggressive, like, Facebook status tombstones.
Serelda was pissed.
Maybe they picked up some stuff while they were in Minnesota. And they were like, passive aggressiveness. This is how we're going to write this tombstone.
Serelda was pissed mostly because she only had one hand.
Right. She's got one hand. One of her children was murdered. And then her son.
Two of her children were murdered.
Two were murdered.
Yeah, Archie. And
then
Jesse
was betrayed, and I can see her at the funeral home, like, explaining what
you
will be.
Write this.
No, just fuck gritting through her teeth.
So, Jesse James's widow, who interestingly was also named Zerelda, because they were cousins, so it's clearly a family name. she died alone and in poverty.
Oh, that's really sad.
Yep. As for Jesse's brother, Frank, now again, Frank kind of started this whole thing. He was like, I'm going to join the militia, and my little brother, I'm going to take him with me, and we're going to kill a bunch of people and scalp them and steal a bunch of stuff from trains. Shortly after Jesse's death, he surrendered, and after which he was taken to Independence, Missouri, where he was held in jail for 3 weeks. Then later he was sent to Galantine, where he remained in jail for a year while awaiting trial.
Not to be confused with February 13th, Galantine's Day.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Totally different.
Totally different. Finally, James was acquitted and went to Oklahoma to live with his mother. So he actually never was incarcerated in a penitentiary, and he was never convicted of any of the charges against him.
I hate that.
He was involved in so many massacres, and they're like, oh, but he surrendered. He lost his brother. Is that not punishment enough?
I mean, you can get into the whole argument about how, like, jail is terrible and it's not a thing we should do and, like, all the different options. But in this moment, I hate that.
That is all stuff for people who are selling weed. This guy massacred countless individuals.
Yeah. And Zerelda's going to be fine on her own. She doesn't need this white guy to come back to her house to help her do things. Like, she is a strong, independent woman.
And she's got other kids that have not died yet.
Right.
And apparently.
And weren't Frank.
And apparently, Frank, when he turned himself in, he's like, I haven't killed anyone in, like, 7 years.
I'm reformed.
I'm reformed. I know that I murdered and scalped a bunch of people.
I found Jesus.
I found Jesus.
I found Judas.
After my brother had also been betrayed, I was like, yeah, Jesus gets it.
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus.
It is in the final years of his life, Frank merchandised his past right up until his death in February of 1915 at the age of 72. He had returned to the James farm, where curious spectators could pay 50 cents to see the farm, and for just a little bit more money, they could even buy pebbles from Jesse's grave.
Oh my God. Wow. So he just went from one shitty area to a different shitty area.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, gift shop with candy chocolate rocks that look like the pebbles of his grave.
Or maybe... raspberry filled Jesse James heads. I don't know.
Oh. Marketing. Bring it full circle.
Gummy hands?
No, that's too much.
But only the right ones.
Oh, so if anybody wants to hire our new marketing company, Left of Sinners, for all these great ideas that you are currently hearing on this podcast, it will be Kayla, Brittany, and Brianne filling your company with great ideas such as jelly-filled James Heads and chocolate grave rocks.
Don't forget about the jelly hands.
Oh, yes, yes, yep.
So only gummy hands.
Gummy hands.
The gummy hands.
So you, too, could have this brain power trust on your side.
Team KBB.
KBB.
Kelly Blue Book. That's a car thing.
It is said that the James Farm has been experiencing ghostly activity for over a century. And given its tumultuous past and documented violence that occurred there and the general temperament of those who resided there, it's not much of a surprise. Though, interestingly, even though it was Jesse James's infamous history that made the farm famous and made it into a museum, his ghost is not one of the ones that's said to be there, according to most sources. Yeah.
Well, wait, but his ghost haunts other places, right?
Actually, he's more often associated with the Talbot Tavern in Bardstown, Kentucky, which I covered in episode 47.
I was like, I feel like we've talked about his ghost before. Okay.
Yeah, cool. Apparently he got really drunk and started shooting at the birds on the walls in his hotel room. But it was that because it was haunted and the birds came out to attack him. He is seen there all of the time, but he is... I also didn't expect to reference two of my past stories in this one story. It just kept coming up, and I was like, well, that sounds familiar. Oh, I've covered that before.
It's fun to reference our old stories.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
When we're 3 years in, there's a lot of references to be made.
It's all connected. Mm-hmm. It's all coming together. But what you are likely to experience at the James Farm is the sound of phantom horse hooves. And there are frequent reports of lights that are seen inside the building long after it has been locked up for the evening, as well as the sound of slamming doors. Not to be confused with
Adam Herman.
The slamming doors.
Goddamn Duluth.
Goddamn Duluth.
Show me a sign. So good.
I'm just going to send. I'm going to be like, Adam, I know you don't typically listen, but like listen like right here.
We've referenced him twice now. Staff also reports an extremely tense feeling when they're in the home, which, like I said, is now a museum, and movement that is seen, but which does not register on the security monitoring system. So people are seeing things, but it's not coming up as actual movement. There are also reports that on foggy mornings, the sounds of horses and hushed voices can be heard coming from the nearby woods. However, there are no tracks of people or horses when people go to investigate.
And that's not an easily, like, confusable sound.
Horses? No.
Like, you don't hear hoofbeats and then it turns out it's the train rolling nearby, you know?
Right.
I'm trying to think of any other noise I could confuse that with, and I'm not coming up with much.
Right.
Except for two coconuts being clapped together.
That's a very... Again, Monty Python. Right.
Though, of course... Locals say that the spirit of Jesse James does reside there, quote, finally settling down for a life on the farm after a life on the run. Though my bet is that it's actually his brother Archie, who actually died there for Frank and Jesse's crimes because he's probably pissed off.
Yep.
And that is the story of Jesse James and his family farm in Kearney, Missouri.
All right. On a skeptic scale, I'm going to give this a 4. And I'm going to say that the 4 is because I don't think Jesse James is there.
Mm-mm, I don't think so either.
But I think the rest of the family has every right to be there because I would be pissed too.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Like, and the Pinkerton gang attacked them at like midnight and they threw like, what is it? Molotov cocktails?
Yeah.
Like through their window. Everything caught on fire. Poor Archie died.
A hand was lost.
Because it exploded to pieces.
It's one of those things where I would be, we've all had well, I shouldn't say we've all. A lot of us have had family members that you're like, if you could just be off the fucking tree, that would, if I could split this tree in half and that half could go away. So like, it sounds to me like Jesse and Frank were the two where you're like, oh, could you be off the tree? No, but you're still here. So we're going to suffer for the shit you pull.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just you know? Quit massacring people.
And I'm not saying that the other family or the rest of the family was innocent by any means, because they had slaves, like they had enslaved people.
They still sided with the Confederacy.
Yeah. I'm not like, I am not defending them, but I am more annoyed at Frank and Jesse than I am the rest of them.
Yeah. Apparently their mother was proud. According to one source, was proud of the work that they did.
Oh, never mind.
For the Confederacy.
I still am going to go with the whole four, because I still think they would have been pissed even if the whole family was shitty.
Well, and I know nothing about Archie.
Yeah.
Well, we know Archie died before his mother died. So his unfinished business is that, like, did mom die? Did I miss it? Should I have been there for her?
Oh, and that's a traumatic death. I mean, that's...
Totally.
Your whole family is being attacked. You've got siblings and your mother, back in the day, a lot of, even more patriarchal than we deal with now. Archie is like the one or two men in the house at that point.
Mm-hmm. One of four.
But I'm like in that, at that point, because Frank and Jesse were out in a boat.
Yeah. The mother, the stepdad, those two had four children of their own.
Oh, yeah.
And then prior to that, she had had three children.
Yep. But two had died.
Two infants.
Those were Jesse James' children.
Oh, okay. Anyway, okay. So either way, like at that point, you're worried about the sisters and the mom in the household.
Yeah.
So you're clinging not only because it's a super tragic death, but like you were saying, yeah. Are they okay? Am I like, and then you're like trying to protect a family you couldn't protect.
Right. I'm not leaving without them. I'm dying. I screwed up. I failed. I should have stopped this.
Also, I'm not really sure what the family's financial situation was, because this is after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And so the farm that where they got most of their money, I'm not really sure if they were already suffering because they chose the wrong profession and that required enslaved individuals. And then when that was taken away, What was the situation? And then all of a sudden someone throws Molotov cocktails into your house and suddenly you're like, fuck, now I'm mad.
Yeah, it's Archie. He's hanging out.
That's what I think.
So I went four. What would you think?
I'm going to say three. I think some of this is Frank trying to make money. I think Frank is slimy.
Yeah. Frank is so slimy. And he didn't even get in trouble.
Yeah. He's just another sleazy, entitled, old white dude who thinks he can just swing it around and get what he wants. That's what I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm also going to give it a three.
Okay.
And, yeah, I don't like him.
Mm-mm. No.
I also am very, disillusioned by the whole Jesse James thing, because I definitely I grew up with him being like a Robin Hood type guy. I did not realize that he was actually...
Neither did I.
Awful. So when I, at the beginning of the story, when I said, oh, you just wait, I found out some things about Jesse James. That's what I found out. He's awful.
And the running wild through the hills chasing Jesse James now makes more sense, because mm-hmm. Jesse James was a villain.
Yeah, he was an outlaw, and so cowboys caught outlaws.
Yeah.
But I think in my head, because of that whole, like, I am the goth girl, like,
yeah.
I always liked villains, but I never associated like, I knew he was an outlaw, but I never associated it as an actual person in my brain. That was somebody that was created for a story.
Yeah.
So my brain was never like, oh, that was a real person. And then you find out, oh, this is not somebody I should have been like happy about.
Well, it's like the Paul Bunyan of it all.
Yes. You know who's better? Pierre the Pantsless Voyager. Look it up. Two Harbors. Anyway.
Two Harbors would have some sort of pantsless mascot.
Have you seen it? Oh, it's hilarious.
Oh my god, we need to go.
Is he not wearing pants?
Next time Next time we go to your other house, we're gonna drive a little further. We'll go get a beer at Castle Danger.
Okay.
And you will see Pierre. His eyes are red. They light up. He used to be outside of a motel that got torn down, and so the earthwood took him over, and now he like greets you as you come into town. It's real bad. I can't wait to show him to you. I can't believe Steve hasn't pointed him out to you yet. Anyway,
I know there was a big chicken.
No, that's the Walden's rooster. This is different.
Oh no, okay.
Oh my God,
you guys got a lot of statues in Two Harbors.
Yeah, we do.
Tourist town.
It's the only thing we have going for us.
Stand by this big thing and take a photo. Then go get some ice cream.
The amount of people that stop and take a picture with the Sinclair dinosaur is really ridiculous. Yes.
I have one.
God damn it, of course you do. All right, so, Brianne.
Yeah.
When I first approached you about joining us, I asked you if you believed in the paranormal, and you said...
Yes.
Do you have any experiences to share with us?
Yeah, well, there was an episode prior that I shared. I submitted a story that you all read.
That was episode 15, I believe, the Homegrown Listener Stories episode.
Yeah, so that was like a ghost that I had come across. I also lived in Central Hillside of Duluth on 4th and 5th. That's, you always say the avenue and then the street in Duluth when you're talking about the hillside. So that would be 4th Avenue East and 5th Street at 405 East 5th. We lived in this duplex upper floor. And the owner, it was his dad's house, and the owner was older. And the wife, maybe also the husband, died in the house. And they told us not to go in the attic. They're like, you're renting the top floor. That's it. You guys don't need to be going in the attic. It is unlocked, but it's not safe up there. Children shouldn't be running up there. And we were in...
That's a legit thing for a landlord to say, though. Like, yeah, but you are renting this floor. Like, I've had places where I've rented where they're like... You rent all of this one door, which like leads into a side thing. They're like, that's storage. You don't need to be going in there.
Yeah, but I got to say, I would definitely have put a lock on it if you're not. I mean, children would have been like, well, I'm going to go. Now you just made me want to go up there.
Exactly, which we did. So, so let's see. The back bedroom was my bedroom. So I was like by the attic access. So there were other bedrooms at the front of the house facing the street, facing the helicopter pad for Essentia and the lake. And then it was the living room and then the kitchen. And then my bedroom was like this afterthought in the back, right? And there was a hallway between my room and then the stairs that went up to the attic. So this is one of those old school homes in Duluth that has like the fuel tanks in the basement. And the access to the attic is actually like a legit stairwell, like Beetlejuice, right? Yeah. Okay. Everything was old, built in wood. It was just like this ancient house that had been there literally forever. And I decided to go in there, and we kept a filing cabinet and some other storage stuff like you do in a place you can't go. Like you just throw shit there. So, I went in, I had to like kind of crawl over this metal file cabinet, and I went up to the top, and I couldn't walk to the top stair. Like the pressure from whatever, now, okay, wind, right? And like, it's a cold space. It's not heated, but I would pop my head up and I just felt like I was being pushed down. And I had gone in a couple times to go check it out because I would hear things and whatnot.
Right. You're like, what is up there?
Yeah. Is there a raccoon up there? Is grandma man's up there, you know, whatever,
right?
Like
you're not automatically going to ghost, because we do know like you could have a raccoon or a squirrel, like that's just a thing that happens,
right? This is a crappy duplex in Duluth.
Yeah,
there's animals, right? So I went up there several times, and all I could see, because I would literally feel like I was being pushed back down. Maybe it's my own fear, maybe there, I don't know, but my body was telling me retreat. And so what I could see was a wooden rocking chair. What the fuck? Why is one just hanging out up in an attic?
Don't leave rocking chairs places. That's,
no. Just don't have them in your house. You they will always be haunted.
Yeah.
Yeah, give it to Goodwill.
Give it to Goodwill.
Dude, how many Goodwills do you think are haunted?
Oh, God.
So many.
I bet they have a disclaimer like that one hotel.
Yeah, they're like, if you take this rocking chair home, do not bring it back.
Own. Yeah.
But it will rock on its own.
Or if you work there, they're like, listen, you get first dibs on the shit that comes in, but here's the little disclaimer. You have to sign this piece of paper. You might be taking more home than a New Kids on the Block boombox. That's all I'm saying. There might be another member hanging out in that radio. Okay. You don't know.
All right, so you look up, you see a rocking chair, and you're
like,
what
the fuck? I see a rocking chair, don't like it. Also, it looked immaculately clean up there, which kind of freaked me out. Now, later on in life, seeing some horror movies, like ones that have the, where the twist is like literally someone was living in there with you and you didn't know it.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking back like, don't go up there. It's not for kids. It was super clean. Always felt like I shouldn't be up there. Who lived in the attic?
I don't like that.
I don't like that either. Like, I don't even have a response.
I'm now so glad you're alive. Right. Like, I'm just glad you're alive to be my friend.
I lived to tell this tale.
Although I have definitely seen stories, or I've heard of stories with ghosts where it is clean. And it's not a person, it's a ghost. And I actually lived very close to that when we started the podcast, because instead of listening to the roaring motorcycles, we had to stop to wait for the helicopter.
Yep.
I had an attic in my apartment. I lived in a duplex. That's where the litter box was. Really dumb during the summer when it's really hot up there. But my attic got very dusty just on its own.
Because it just happens.
It just happens. Where you had the mirror.
No, that was
by Chester Creek.
I flip my mirror every night because of that. My mirror every night.
If it's facing your bed, you should flip it every night. Yes. See?
Yes. I know the thing.
Proactive responses.
Be smart like Brianne and Abe.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. Okay, and so then I'll share one more thing. So I have, in 2006, my dad died by suicide. In 2009, my brother Tim died in a car accident. And in 2018, my other brother Justin died in an ATV accident. Mm-hmm. Immediate Jesus. Family member deaths. It's me, my mom, dad, and two brothers. Dad and two brothers are gone. Mm-hmm. I hear every now and then, Brianne. Creeps me the fuck out. Really? And I hear it every now and then when I'm like about to fall asleep or about to wake up, you know, like in those half awake, half asleep moments. Mm-hmm. And I hear like a man. And I'm like, what? Keep talking. What are you
say
trying
something
to say?
Else. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I need more.
And I've had all three of them at different times have visited me in my dreams. You know, like when people lose an immediate family member, they came in your dream and you're like, oh my God, you're alive. You're back. Or you see them and like, they say a message, but you don't actually hear the message, but you're like, I felt like resolve or whatever. Yeah. Like these are very common stories. Right. And I do believe that like, it's our brain processing what's going on. But the whole like hearing a voice in those moments when I am most vulnerable and can't catch it or respond or whatever freaks me the hell out.
I was going to say, does it scare you or do Absolutely. You find it comforting?
No, when I hear it, then I'm like, okay, so where, what, when, what's next?
Could it just be that they're trying to remind you that they're still there?
Possibly.
So it could be like, could you, and I'm just asking, shift your perception when it happens a little bit to be like, okay, it's not that they're trying to tell me something. It's just them being like, hey, I'm still here.
Yo, I'm here. What worries me is that I've seen too many movies and my brain thinks, warning.
Oh, yeah.
I am trying to reach you, Brianne, and I'm going to do everything I can from this area to come to your area and break through with a little bit of a warning. That's where my brain goes.
Oh, so you're worried that they're going to give you bad news.
Yeah, or like, watch out. Today, or I mean, right now.
If it was like a family member, I'd be less scared. I have, however, after joining TikTok, realized that white people are fucking stupid, which I knew before TikTok. Let's be real,
right?
But white people are stupid because most people of color recognize that if you hear someone saying your name and you can't identify where it's from, you're not supposed to respond to it. Because then you're inviting whatever the fuck it is that's saying your name to come get you.
Yes.
If you can't see them say it, you go find your mom. Just because it sounds like your mom doesn't mean it's your mom.
Right.
And apparently that's like a relatively well-known thing among like
people of color?
People of color. Of anyone that's
like
not
BIPOC
white.
Folks. Yep, BIPOC folks.
Yeah, that's like it's...
Yeah, we're not going down the basement.
We're
going
not
into
going,
the woods.
Yeah. Oh, you have someone in the basement going... Brittany, come down here. Don't fucking go down there.
Right.
Yes, Kayla.
I'm going to be one of those really stupid white people.
Okay.
And just throw this out there. If you wanted to, you do not have to take this up. You don't have to.
Oh my God, she's going to have you talk to him.
I'm just saying, if you ever wanted to, I do have a Ouija board with a blessed planchette. Like, if you wanted ever to, if that mood ever strikes you, I have both things in my house. I keep them separate. When I do use a Ouija board, I follow all of the procedures. I am not willy-nilly with the Ouija board.
I don't know why you're looking at me as if I'm willy-nilly with
no,
it.
I'm looking at you because I feel like you would accuse me of being willy-nilly.
No, I told you that I would Ouija board with you as long as it wasn't in my house.
That's right. So yeah. I do have it. I do have it. If you ever want to try it, I'm just throwing it out there that that avenue is available to you. The planchette that I have is different from the planchette that came with the board.
You're following all the things.
Well, the planchette that came with the board was broken.
Oh.
That's a whole other thing.
Which is not good. Thing.
That's a story.
I have the board. The planchette that was given was gifted to me and Sean as a wedding present. It was specifically blessed. Like,
okay.
It's all... Okay. Anytime I've used it, I've done the whole, like, open everything up, do all the proper procedures, close everything. I've never been willy-nilly with it at all.
Yeah.
That is open to you if you ever want to try it.
I'm not 100% certain that it's the word Brianne or that it's them. So there's also that. So I'm not sure on that. And then the last thing I'll share is my teenager, who is now 19. She was 14 at the time. We rented out one haunted hotel room at Schwamigan Hotel in Ashland, Wisconsin.
I've never heard of this.
Me neither.
Oh, hun. Follow-up episode. So
okay.
For real.
We stayed in the haunted room, or maybe there was a couple ones, but we stayed in the one that has like the turret. So it's on the end of the building.
I want to stay in a turret room.
I was going to say, I love a turret. Yeah.
Got a jacuzzi tub.
Oh my God. You're speaking Kayla's language.
Okay,
listen. It's got a turret. It's got a jacuzzi. It is haunted. Next hot tub sushi date night, Sean.
Ashland, Wisconsin.
Ashland, Wisconsin. I don't care about Ashland generally. Like, I don't hate it. I just don't never go, but.
Yeah.
You travel out of town for that.
Sounds like I'm going to Ashland, Wisconsin.
So I won't tell the backstory of why it's haunted because I'm feeling an episode manifesting here. But I will tell you, I told my kid, it was a sleepover birthday party. She was bringing a few of her friends. And I said, no Ouija boards. I'm not fucking around.
Mm-hmm. That's legit. Mm-hmm. Because also, I've only used Ouija boards like since I've been adult enough to like know and try it. After looking into various other aspects of everything.
Sure.
Like you
gotta look up the rules.
Yeah. Being a teenager's using Ouija boards is a very different thing.
This is how movies start. So they say, we're gonna go for a walk, and that's code for like they're probably gonna smoke cigarettes or something, whatever, or vape, whatever the little ones do these days. And so they went for a walk, and I'm like looking out the window at this. What I call a witch tree, right? Like it's a totally dead tree. It's all twisted and
old and gnarly.
And I had full body chills looking at this tree. Like something happened right there along the water in this town that Native Americans were clearly murdered, pushed away from the water, right? Into swampland because that's what white people did.
White people suck and they're stupid.
Something happened with that tree, with this shoreline. Like, it's right on Lake Superior on the South Shore. So anyways, didn't see anything, but I just felt like all sorts of ick. Stayed there the whole night, didn't hear or see anything. And like 2 days later, we're back in Duluth. And I was like, yeah, Ava, I didn't really think that place was haunted. She's like, I know, we brought the Ouija board and we used it.
What? No, girl.
14 years old. Not smart.
Do you still bring that up? Because I would.
I don't.
You're too nice to your children.
She's done other things.
Well, if you're honestly, grasping at straws, be like, and another thing. Do you remember for your 14th birthday when I told you do not bring the Ouija board and then you brought the freaking Ouija board?
Next time she asks for help with groceries, you just be like, remember that time that I told you to not bring the ghost phone and you brought the ghost phone?
To the haunted hotel.
To the haunted hotel?
With the fucking witch tree out the window?
Yeah. You get ramen noodles. Thank you.
Listen, Schwamigan Hotel is only about an hour and a half away.
I'm calling dibs on this location. Ha!
Road trip.
I said it first.
It's close enough to go to.
You call dibs, but I'm going to have a sushi hot tub date night there.
I'm going to go there first.
Those are my stories. That's it. That's what I got.
Showdown. There's a left of skeptic showdown happening right now.
God damn it.
Are we making this uncomfortable for you?
No, I'm good.
Okay,
she
good.
She has the advantage because homegrown is not coming up for her.
Yeah. You don't have time, Kayla. There's no time.
There's no time.
Although hotel rates are really good right now because it's April and that's before their tourist rates.
Brian, 21 days.
Yeah. We don't have time.
We don't have time.
I don't know that I want to go back there. My family lives outside of Ashland. Like, 20,
oh, I thought you were talking about the chicken shack. No.
I don't think I want to go back there. I am not ready. I am not ready.
No, I don't want to stay at that hotel again.
I want to stay in a turret, a haunted turret.
Yeah. I want to stay in a haunted turret with a jacuzzi tub.
Yeah.
Well, now I have one of those in the North Shore house, so.
Okay, well, and I have a hot tub in my backyard. I'm just saying it's different when it's a hotel and you can watch Trashy Food Network.
That's true.
In a haunted room.
In a haunted room.
Yep. That's why I like the suites.
Anyway.
Anyway. So we do have a listener story, but we don't have enough time to tell it. So I'm sorry, Gina. I will tell the story about how Kevin is attractive to moaning myrtles, but we're just not
male
there yet.
Moaning myrtles,
male
too.
Male moaning myrtles. We're just not there yet. And I love you. Last week, after we posted last week's episode title, there was a character named Kevin. And we were mad at him, so we said Kevin a lot, and that's what we titled it.
Yeah.
Nice.
And my friend Gina, her husband's name is Kevin, and she had sent us a listener story. So she was like, oh, well, I thought this was going to be, like, you yelling at Kevin, but you were yelling at a different Kevin.
A different Kevin. And I think I brought it up in the episode. I was like, Gina's going to be like, why do you keep yelling at Kevin?
What did he do?
We will bring that up. I have it saved right here, but we just don't have time today. We will save it for a time when we have time. Brianne.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us.
This was so fun.
I enjoy this deeply. And now we are second time in a row of having beautiful guests. Why are all of our guests so beautiful and amazing and funny?
Because our friends are beautiful and amazing and funny.
We have the best friends in the world.
Yay. So last week was Abe.
Abe.
Yeah.
A.
Yep.
Brianne.
B.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Is C Silence next?
No, Corey is next.
Yeah. A, B, C.
So we're going to be A, B, C, C. Wait, I went reverse of that.
Yeah, we didn't sing that right.
A, B, C, C. I don't sing. I play a tuba.
You know the notes, though.
Wrong notes.
Wrong notes, the wrong pep band.
Yeah.
Look out for a thing. I'm going to make a post on our social media about that too. Ha. Okay, so we got to listen to Brianne tell us her stories.
That's a listener story.
It's a listener story, but you don't have to be here in person to tell us a listener story. You could email it to us. You can send us a listener story by email, leftofskeptic@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, www.leftofskeptic.com, and click the Listener Stories tab at the top of the page. You can also get there by clicking the link tree in our bio. You can choose to remain anonymous or include your name, whatever you prefer. We just ask that you please include your pronouns.
You can also follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter @LeftofSkeptic and Facebook @LeftofSkepticPodcast.
Thank you, Brianne, for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to everybody for listening. We love you and appreciate you.
It's true, we do.
Happy Spooky Wednesday.
Happy Spooky Wednesday.
Okay.
Bye.
The Left of Skeptic podcast is written and hosted by Kayla Moria and Brittany Lind. This week's episode is edited by me, Brittany Lind. The Left of Skeptic music is by Dave Melling and Emily Havoc, and our artwork is by Al LeBlanc. Okay, bye!